Volume 2 of the 4th National Climate Assessment was released on Friday, and like the NADA report released in July, it tells of a frightening future if we don't do what's necessary to reduce our negative impact on the climate. The first volume of the report was released in November or October of 2017, and it was called the Climate Science Special Report. While Volume 1 focused more on the science behind climate change and how it's physically affecting the Earth and everything on it, this report focuses on the impact of the science and analysis presented in Volume 1. On this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be looking at and diving into this report in our typical LFTS fashion, breaking it down what we can and making it a bit more digestible, while also opening up the lane for conversation. Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to. So welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so you don't have to vote. You feel me? You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PacSync, a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of Black people in America through education, a culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PacSync.org. Go on ahead, head to the website, check out the Learning Center, leave a review, leave a comment, take a survey, give a donation, become a member. Do whatever you can to help them. Spread the word because they're doing whatever they can to help you. And without further ado, we're going to jump into this repeat. In 1990, the Global Change Research Act was passed. Now, this law required research into global warming and related issues and required a report be generated for Congress every 4 years on climate change and its impact. It also directed the president to establish a committee on earth and environmental sciences to help with the research and analysis, as well as to do other things. The president was to establish an interagency United States Global Change Research Program to help improve understanding of global change, and required that the chairman of the Federal Coordinating Council of Science, Engineering, and Technology, the council that the committee was slotted to run through, he had to, through the committee, develop a national global change research plan for implementation of the Global Change Research Program. Yeah, whatever. Basically, it ordered the president to establish a committee to look at climate change and laid out the framework for a report and generate timeframes for when that report needed to be given. So the first National Climate Assessment Report was released in 2000. The second was in 2009. And the third was in 2014. So they operating on CPT, but they getting there, because the last one last year and this year, those two reports combined make up this report. So maybe, you know, at this point, they'll start doing it every 4 years like they're supposed to by law. But then again, you know, whatever. It happens how it happens. So this report was broken up into several different topic areas, and we're going to hit half of them this show and the other half on our show on Thursday. Now, it is important, before we get into this report, that I make a few statements. First thing is, it's important to remember that this report is based on climate models, which themselves are based on the data put into them and the understanding of the people that created them. So if you disagree with the model, then obviously you're going to disagree with the outcomes that it predicts. And with that being said, the model that this report is based on does take natural climate change into account. It doesn't suggest that climate change would not occur without humans. It suggests that climate change would not be occurring as fast without humans. And the ecosystems of the planet would likely have enough time to adapt in a natural environment. It's also important to understand that I view these reports as worst-case scenarios. It's entirely possible that the reports won't come true exactly, but that doesn't mean that the takeaway should be thrown away. It doesn't matter if your beach house didn't flood like the talking head said it would. Did the water get higher? So in a lot of these climate change arguments, people are missing the fact that things did happen. And just because they didn't happen exactly as described, people throw out the fact that something did in fact happen. So I take this is my view on climate change discussions. And that's kind of how these shows are going to run. It doesn't really matter if the fire didn't burn your house down. Was there a fire and was it caused by what they said it would be caused by? The statement being true in concept is more important than the precision and outcome extremes when it comes to climate change, in my opinion. And finally, I am a climate change believer. The scope and the extent of the change doesn't matter much to me. I believe humans are a factor in the climate change and the weather, and I don't believe it's a positive factor. That being said, I see doing things to reduce our footprint and negative impacts on the environment as being a good thing, regardless of how much they impact in the grand scheme of things. Burning coal has a net negative effect on the environment, so we should do what we can to stop doing that, even if you could prove that carbon isn't causing temperatures to rise. And with all that being said, now let's dive in. So each chapter is summarized in key messages, and I like the way that's formatted. So the show will follow that formatting, talking along the key messages. Now I'm going to paraphrase the messages whenever I feel like it. So when you go to check the report, don't expect to see what I'm saying verbatim. So when the very first thing is our changing climate. Now, the very first key message here is climate change is real. The earth is getting hotter, and the only credible causal factor for that has been observed is human activity. Temperatures have increased 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit from 1901 to 2017. Now, the only absolute thing in this key message is that the climate is changing and humans are playing a part. The fact that they would mention observable evidence does show an understanding that there might be something else going on that we simply can't observe or measure at this moment. And this room for error is something that is very common in most scientific reports, and it's something that is usually missing from conversation. Also, we need to understand that there is a lot of stuff being pumped into the atmosphere or escaping into the atmosphere. It's not just carbon or methane, but a lot of other chemicals, both natural and man-made. Refrigerants are a great example of this, is they can be thousands of times more powerful as greenhouse gases than carbon, not to mention the old iterations of refrigerants damage the ozone layer. We use refrigerant gases and things that are meant to keep something cool, like an air conditioner or a refrigerator. And most of these gases were created to serve a purpose without thought to their larger environmental impact. Now, we've since gone back and rechanged the chemical structure of the refrigerant so that they don't impact the ozone layer as detrimentally as they did before, which is why we aren't having ozone layers to the extent that we were in the 90s. But, you know, just an example. Key message two, it's going to keep getting hotter. At this point, the climate is going to keep changing, but we could do things to slow the change by reducing emissions. Remember, the climate changes anyways. So if we were to try to stop climate change altogether, that would also be a form of disrupting the natural order. But what we can try to do is make it so that it's a more naturally occurring thing, meaning that all of the species that have evolved to live on the planet have also evolved an ability to adapt and change to the planet at a rate that's commensurate with the change of the planet, meaning they can stay alive if left to their own devices. When you start interfering with stuff and janking shit up, that's when you start creating problems. So at that point, it's important to understand that climate change is going to continue, but we could do things to slow our impact on it and slow it down to a more natural level, or at least a more natural level given consideration to what we've already done to it. The third message, oceans are being fucked up, and it's fucking everything else up. According to the report, the oceans have absorbed 93% of the excess heat from human-induced warming since the mid-20th century. The oceans also absorb a considerable amount of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and it provides a buffer, if you will. But by absorbing so much, the oceans are getting warmer and more acidic, and the oceans and the tides within them shape weather patterns and other atmospheric phenomena, and as well as being one of the drivers for life on land. Needless to say, messing up the oceans is messing up the planet, and could definitely be a causal factor in the extreme weather we are seeing. Key message 4, sea levels are rising. Now, it stands to reason that with the temperatures going up and the oceans getting warmer, the ice would start to melt, and there is a lot of water in its solid state on this planet. This is a pretty commonly understood point, so we just move on. The next point is that the U.S. is getting hotter. Duh. The next point is that there is a change in rain patterns. It's raining more in the north than the east and in the U.S. and raining less in the south and the west. Now, the report also talks about how there's less snow and more rain, but again, common conclusions given the fact that it's getting hotter. Now, this next one is that the Arctic won't be the Arctic. It'll still be cold, of course, but temperatures in the Arctic are rising twice as fast. And that makes sense. You know, the Arctic has a lot of ground to make up if it wants to, you know, equal out with the rest of the planet. So there is a lot of methane and carbon dioxide along with other greenhouse gases frozen in that ice. And that's a concern, because if it gets free, and if it's a significant enough amount, it could speed up climate change. Now, there are reports of bacteria and viruses being released from the permafrost and thawing and coming back to life, and us being hit with these zombie plagues or these ancient illnesses that are going to kill us all because we've evolved in an environment that they don't exist in. And while it's possible for an extremophile to live in ice, it has evolved to do so and likely wouldn't survive outside of the ice, much less inside of a human body running at, you know, 98 degrees, almost 100 degrees. And the same would be true for human viruses and bacteria. They likely wouldn't survive being frozen in ice the same way that you wouldn't survive being frozen in ice. Now, key point number 8 here is that the storms are getting worse. And we've all seen this. The storms are becoming more frequent and they're getting stronger, doing billions of dollars in damage every year. That goes back to the point about the ocean for me. Coastal flooding. Now, this has been addressed again. Sea level rise. So, duh. And long-term changes. Climate change is real. It's happened. It's happening. It's not going to reverse on its own. And we can't stop it right now. But we can speed it up and make it, or we can make it worse if we decide to do absolutely nothing. So water is the very first specific target topic they look at. So it's going to be the very first one we look at. Now, changes in water quantity and quality are going to happen. according to the report. So when it comes to quantity, the water is going to be more available in some places because of increased rainfall, precipitation, and such, and less available in others because of changing weather patterns and a decrease in rainfall in those areas. Now, the way we have built our cities and streets also means that a lot of rainwater doesn't reach the ground in order to make it to the water table and become a part of the groundwater. Now, the water table, for those of you who either never learned or have just forgotten ninth grade earth science, the water table is the area that separates the ground and the dirt, as we know it, from the permanently soaked ground beneath it. It's like the entrance to an underground river that carries the water from place to place underground, like a river does. Now, the water does eventually pool up in certain places under the ground and forms these aquifers. That's what they call water gathered underneath the table, the water table. And we drill into those aquifers to create wells and to get drinking water for people that are in places where they don't have access to fresh water and all kinds of things. So right now there are several places experiencing aquifer depletion because they haven't had rain in a while. They're still using water the same way everyone else does. And the water, just the groundwater, isn't being replenished by rain or any other means. So the aquifers are running low and these people are running into severe water shortages. If you recall, we did a show on the drought, the water shortage in South Africa a couple months back. Here you go. There was aquifer depletion there. So for various reasons, aquifers are where most of our drinking water comes from, which means that if you don't have water in your aquifer, if your aquifer is depleted, you don't have water for basically any other purpose. And as we know, because of the salt and other things in the ocean, you can't just drink a mouthful of ocean water. You will die. So that's one of the problems we're running into. Another problem with the water not reaching the water table is because of, we're having this issue because of the streets and the way that we've built our cities. See, the water has to be able to make contact with the ground, with the soil, and it has to be able to work its way through permeable objects, permeable ground. Concrete, tar, and the other things that we lay over the ground to make roads and sidewalks and things like that, those things are impervious. The water can't get through them. So that means that the water is not reaching. The ground is not reaching the water table. And what that means is that the water becomes runoff. And in the case of a storm, that's where you have the flash flooding coming from. Water runoff. Water that is not reaching the water table is not getting into the ground. And it's pooling up, it's aggregating, and it's being carried by winds and it's rushing along the surface. And you get flash floods, you get all kinds of other issues that show up in the case of extreme storms. Now, there are other causes for flash floods, but for the vast majority of us living in cities, the fact that the water can't get to the ground is making a lot of the rushing water that we're dealing with a lot more dangerous. So less snow and ice on the ground also means less water reaching the water table. So in some areas, they're going to have more water than they can do anything with. And in other areas, they're going to be experiencing record droughts. Now, when it comes to the quality of the water, it's going to be worse as well. See, the increasing presence of toxic substances in the atmosphere and on the ground in conjunction with the increased temperatures is going to lower the quality of water tremendously. Now, one advantage of having water seep through the ground to get to the water table is that it's cleansed by the soil it passes through as it ping-pongs around and bounces around. Large objects get filtered out. Large bacteria and other organisms get filtered out. And so, in an ideal world, before we started mucking up the soil, water that passed through the soil and made it to the water table was actually pretty clean water. So as we create these environments and these streets and things that are impervious that the water can't get through, that it just rolls around on, as it's rolling around on the ground, it's collecting all of the chemicals and all of the toxins and everything else that's on the ground, and it's carrying that somewhere. All of these things come into play and they degrade the water quality. And then you run into problems where you have water treatment plants and all these other things that have to be developed because the water is just not drinkable on its own. And when people do drink that water, they get all kinds of water-based illnesses and blah, blah, blah from drinking dirty water. It's just a long mess of things. But suffice to say that because of the way we built our cities and because of climate change, there's going to be a change in the quantity of water, but all of the water is going to be of a lower quality. Now, changes in weather patterns could also potentially destroy infrastructure. And basically, the potential for flooding and you go back to storm surge, and you look at all these other situations that could come as a result of rampant water problems, rampant water issues, precipitation, storms, severe rain, things of that nature. You're running into an issue where infrastructure can be destroyed, roads can be taken out, bridges can be taken out, power lines can be taken out. The various things that we need to survive and move on forward can all be destroyed by rushing water, raining water, inappropriate levels of water, or water in places where it shouldn't be. And the problem with that is when a lot of these things were built, the idea of climate change wasn't really being thought about. So they weren't built with the current climates in mind or with a thought to the shifting climates that we're experiencing. And water management needs an overhaul. With all that being said, we need to change the way that we think about and implement water infrastructure, and these new concepts and strategies need to be based on ideas of climate change and evolving risk. And the report goes into detail about various aspects of water and dealing with the water issue. So if you're interested in that, you should definitely go and read that chapter on water. Now, the next chapter is on energy supply and delivery. Excuse me. The next chapter is on energy supply, delivery, and demand. So, climate change is going to affect our ability to provide energy. Duh. Over the last few years, everyone on the East Coast, especially, has had to deal with weather-related power outages. That's not even a subject that I feel needs to be gotten into. In the Midwest and out West, they have experienced power outages as well. So everybody in America at this point should be familiar with what happens when power companies lose the ability to deliver their product. People lose their lives, people lose their wealth, and people lose access to basic services. So, and for those of you that are like, how do people die from losing power? Just think about the hospitals and the old folks' homes and situations like that where they experience a lot of complications when they lose power. And a lot of Black people are not in situations where they're in an old folks' home or a quality clinic or whatever where there is a quality generator there. So when these places, when they lose power, if they're on something that requires them having power, some sort of life support or something like that, they just SOL. So there are changes in the energy sector that are affecting vulnerabilities. There are certain types of energy that are more vulnerable to climate change than others, and certain types cause climate change, such as using natural gas or coal to create power. So the report says that we need to develop ways of creating energy that are resistant to climate change effects while at the same time not causing climate change. That's like another big duh moment, right? Like, duh. So the report goes on to talk about how we can improve energy system resilience, continue to enhance security, reliability, and resilience of energy systems, providing data collection. It focuses on, or it talks about, ways that we can improve the systems by improved data collection, modeling, analysis, public and private partnerships, and the development and innovation of energy technologies. And it's basically saying that we need to come up with a more effective way to create energy and to provide energy, a way that takes into account climate change and evolving risk and all of the other things that are going on, because we have developed a society that can exist without power. And so when we're in an environment where increasing storms and things of that nature can come along and knock out power, we're in an environment where we're all extremely vulnerable. Land cover and land use change is the next section. Now, land cover changes influence weather and climate. Land cover is essentially what covers the land. Grass and shrubs like out west, forests and trees like in the southeast, or man-made surfaces like the cities in the northeast and their concrete jungles that they love to brag about. Urban areas are warmer than areas of natural land development, and it's been proven that reforestation can foster cooling in localized areas, while urbanizing has the exact opposite effect on an area. So all of you people in your concrete jungles, not only are you meaner and ruder and more savage and less human-like than the rest of us, but you're also contributing to global warming. And your breath stinks, and your poo gas is horrible. So, grasses and shrubs have the added issue of wildfires, especially during droughts like out west. And I'm not saying that forested areas wouldn't have those same issues, but the water that's required to grow a tree versus the water that's required to grow a shrub is just different. And they illustrate different water table levels and different moisture levels in some cases. So the second point they bring up here is that climate impacts on land and ecosystems have to be taken into consideration. Climate change affects land use and ecosystems. And an ecosystem is a community of things that exist in an environment together and interact with each other in various forms and to various extents. So, of course, climate change would affect the way that things interact with each other and their environment. But we should pay close attention to the fact that human development creates and changes ecosystems. Whenever you introduce a foreign element to an environment, you affect that environment. And human development is basically all about introducing foreign elements to natural environments. That's kind of what we do. You know what I'm like? That's kind of just us. Like, there's almost nothing about how we nothing natural about how we develop land. So naturally, when humans show up, especially us Western monsters, you know, there's going to be some changes to the environment, because I don't want to dig a hole and poo in it. I want a toilet. So with that being said, it should also be mentioned at this point that there are graphs and other visual tools included in these sections that contain a bunch of information broken down by region of the country. So if you're curious about how this information affects you specifically, you definitely should go and look at the information for yourself and pay close attention to the visual tools that affect your area of the country. I didn't include that kind of stuff in this show directly because I might have listeners from all over the country, and I don't want to get them bad information because I'm talking about things that don't affect them. And I also didn't want the show to be like really long. So there you have it. So the next section is about the forest. Now, the forest is getting jacked up, basically, along with the things that live in them. Plants are extremely sensitive to the climate. That's kind of the duh statement of the year. They can't move. They're nearly completely at the mercy of their environments. They also provide homes and resources for all the living organisms that share spaces with them. So changes in the environment will affect them and thus affect all the things that depend on them, the entire ecosystem. Down the line, that hits humans directly. No plants or plant-like creatures, no breathable air. It's pretty simple. But this is another one of those damage has been done, but let's not make it worse scenarios. We're going to see changes, and we're going to be seeing changes in the forest for decades, if not centuries, because of what we have already done. But one of the biggest changes that was revealed earlier this year was the fact that the rainforests have stopped absorbing CO2 and started emitting it. Now, they all filled up, you know, they got all juiced up with CO2 because what the plants do, what the forests do is the older trees, and there's actually kind of like a parenting thing going on in the forest. The older trees absorb resources from the atmosphere and they transfer those resources into the younger plants, the buds, the newer life forms that are growing closer to the surface of the ground. Well, when you add in deforestation and all kinds of other disruptive activities towards forest spreading and propagating and things of that nature, you pretty much create a scenario where these plants have all these resources that they're looking to pass on to their offspring, but they don't have any offspring to pass them on to. So the only thing they have left to do is to kick it back out into the atmosphere. So now the rainforest that used to provide a buffer for our greenhouse emissions are now contributing to climate change, which is interesting when you think about that. We've produced so much CO2 that the plants can't eat it all and the oceans can't absorb it all. And it's like the planet is just like, you know what? I just don't know what to do. Like, the planet is running a fever right now. We're a virus. We're some sort of infection, some sort of sickness. And the planet is running a fever. And it's going to kill us. We're all going to die if we don't do anything new. That's kind of dark. The ecosystems are getting beat up, though. You see, forest ecosystems provide huge services like the one I mentioned earlier, absorbing our carbon emissions and storing carbon and providing oxygen and filtering the air to an extent. But with the increasing temperatures and the water shortages in conjunction with deforestation, they aren't as effective at providing the services that they used to provide as they used to be. And steps are being taken to increase the resiliency of the U.S. forest, but it's unknown if the steps that we're taking to create more resilient forests is actually operating on a pace that's fast enough to keep up with the climate change that we are also causing. So I'm not a tree hugger, but I do find the information about the forest and ecosystems and things like that interesting. And that's something that we should all be concerned with because, you know, like me, like I like to breathe. I don't know about you guys, but I like, you know, there's just something about breathing that just makes me live. And so whenever I hear anything about something happening with a system that allows me to breathe, I think you should pay attention to that. I think we should all pay attention to that. And again, it doesn't even matter if you're going to say that climate change is not a big deal or it's not happening or blah, blah, blah. Again, the impact of what we're doing, even if it's not impacting the temperature and the global weather patterns, is still deforestation. We're doing that directly. We're chopping down the trees. So if you like to breathe, at some point you should say, okay, that's enough tree chopping for now. Now, the next section covers ecosystems, ecosystem services, and biodiversity, and it's largely a rehash of what I just said about the forest. Climate change is messing with the animals as well. We've seen changes in animal behavior for many species. That's observable. We've also seen changes in geographical regions, migration patterns, the timing of biological events. It's also been recorded. But if the climate change is faster than any species' ability to adapt to it, extinction will occur. And there are a lot of scientists right now saying that we are in the middle of an extinction event. Right now, we are in the middle of an extinction event. Think about the bees. You guys remember the honeybees, right? Everybody loves the honeybees, the bumblebees. They made a movie about the bees. I forget what it was called. I think it was called Bees. Anyways, and you remember not too long ago, everybody was talking about the bees. Where are the bees gone? The bees are just not here. The bees are dying. They're going to take their honey with them. And we're going to be out of one of the greatest food products ever created. I'm not a big honey fan, but the bees. Think about the bees. But climate change is also messing with non-plant ecosystems as well. You see, climate change is making the spread of invasive species worse and changing the way that species interact with each other in their environment. And we don't know what effect that's going to have. Now, invasive species are species that are in an ecosystem that they are not native to. And as such, they damage the ecosystem. You know, it kind of seems like human beings, modern humans anyways, might be an invasive species on the planet Earth. And that brings me to an article that I read at one point that said that life on the planet was actually started by bacteria, extremophile bacteria, that some kind of way managed to be blown off of the top atmospheric layer of Venus, carried over to Earth, and planted themselves here. Now, that sounds like a bunch of malarkey, obviously. But it is an interesting concept to think that we're all aliens on this planet. And it would actually fit with the way we're treating the planet, because we're definitely, you know, after all of these years, we haven't found a natural sort of equilibrium. So anyways, invasive species. Think about the bees. Invasive species can come in the form of plants that choke out other species for resources and dominate their new area. Our animals introduced to a new area with no natural predators or barriers to their growth, and their population just gets out of control. They also eventually absorb all the resources in an area and threaten the existence of native organisms. Now, you will feel the effects of a damaged ecosystem. See, this is deeper than your uncle losing his job as a logger because all the trees is gone. You see, we're talking about the housing sector collapsing because all the trees is gone. We're talking about economies collapsing because the housing sector is destroyed and you can't develop, and building materials are stifled and all of these other things because all the trees is gone. We're talking about people starving because animals is extinct because all the trees is gone. And this argument can be made for every major component of the ecosystem that we live in as humans. But of course, it's always sad when someone loses their job, right? I mean, it's always sad when someone loses their livelihood. But right now, we're putting jobs on equitable ground with lives. And that, you know, like, I got a fundamental problem with that. Like, I don't care about you being able to go to work tomorrow if, you know, like, my grandkids are going to die. You know, you can get another job. You can do that. And if you can't, then, you know, things that can adapt go extinct. Maybe all of these people that can adapt to the changing world should go extinct. You know, survival of the fittest, the strongest, or the most adaptable. So the next section focused on oceans and marine resources. Now, the oceans are being fucked as we speak. That's currently happening. It is. And it's not like some romantic, kind, gentle type romance novel fuck. It's like, it's bad. It's the Me Too movement type stuff. So coral reefs come to mind when I think about this, because for years, like, we've been told that the coral reefs are dying off and nobody cared. And then they said, well, when the coral reefs die, there's usually an extinction level event. And I guess nobody still cares. And guess what? It's not just the coral reefs anymore. The oceans are warming. They're becoming more acidic. They're losing their oxygenation. And other factors are now wholesale destroying ocean ecosystems. I know everybody wants y'all snow crab lips, y'all blue crabs and all that other stuff. You don't take care of the oceans, all that good seafood eating. Now, we can do things to stop the destruction, but significant damage has already been done, and we have to acknowledge that. And we will have to learn to adapt to live with it. Now, in time, the planet does have the ability to heal itself, and species with a little assistance can bounce back. But you have to stop doing the detrimental things that you're currently doing in order to allow those things space to happen. And in some of these cases, with these oceanic ecosystems, these marine ecosystems, they're going to need help because they've been pushed past the brink. So we need to remember that as the oceans go, we go. You see, stuff in the ocean can survive without life on land. Unfortunately, life on land cannot survive without the stuff in the ocean. A big chunk of our breathable oxygen comes from the ocean. A big chunk of the buffer that we have from all of the toxic chemicals and things that are produced are absorbed into the ocean. A lot of the heat and the temperature that we experience on this planet is kept in check by the ocean. If you destroy the ocean and you destroy the ecosystems of the ocean, the plant life in the ocean and all of those things that survive in the ocean, you are essentially committing suicide in a very slow manner. I'd rather just drop a nuke and get it over with in a flash of light than to slowly starve out resource-wise. But marine life is also in jeopardy because they live in the ocean. The ocean is getting to be an ugly place to live. And I know we've all been talking about how the fish are getting ugly. That's because they live in an ugly environment. Ugly environments produce ugly things. If you want to make something more beautiful, you make the environment more beautiful. And that applies to people as well. So, yeah, they're ugly now, but at least they're still alive. If we keep going in this direction, they won't even be alive for us to call them ugly. I wonder if heaven has an ocean. You ever wonder if all fish go to heaven? Kind of like all dogs go to heaven? No? Fish don't go to heaven? My wife says fish don't go to heaven. Anyways, extreme events are becoming normal. Hey, that's kind of like in American politics. Things that used to be abnormal and unacceptable are quickly becoming normal and expected. And strong storms fit that bill. And while they are becoming normalized for us, their impact is still extreme when it comes to ocean ecosystems. Agriculture and rural communities are the next chapter. And agricultural productivity is expected to decrease. Now, this makes sense with the changes in rain patterns, water levels, and temperatures. It should be expected that growing food won't be as successful as it used to be. And agricultural workers have been changing their breeding approaches and using crop hybridization and various other tools to create crops that can withstand more stress and yield more produce. But this also opens the door for discussions on modified food that is being had, but probably needs to be had with more science and more factual information introduced into the discussion. But you see, not only is if we go back a bit, we talked about the water being of a lower quality, and we talked about the water table and groundwater and blah, 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 but the soil is also going to be affected, and the quality of the soil is going to be reduced. You see, in addition to the rain issues, we're going to be talking about runoff, we're talking about invasive species, we're talking about leaching. And in terms of soil, when we're talking about leaching, we're talking about the soil losing nutrients as the water carries those nutrients into the groundwater. So the water basically strips the soil of its nutrients as it makes its way to the groundwater. When that happens, you basically get a bunch of dirt that can't support any sort of plant life. Now, most agricultural workers have practices in place to restore soil, but innovation will need to occur in order to combat climate change. And the runoff in agricultural areas, I want to make this distinction, is different from the runoff in cities and urban areas. You see, in agricultural areas, we're going to be looking at runoff caused by excessive rain flooding the soil. It's distinctly different from in cities, where runoff is caused by wonderful driveways and paved roads and sidewalks, which aren't permeable, so the water simply can't get through to the water table. So that creates an entirely different issue where you basically have a flooded ground. And then some could say that that essentially means that the water table has now reached the same level as the surface area. So another point of mention here is that the heat is killing off the humans and the animals. And extreme heat is a threat to humans and livestock. And in Japan this summer, they had an extended heat wave that killed 20 people or more. And when a cow dies, not only do we lose the cow, but we also potentially lose the milk in certain circumstances. That has an economic impact. And so with that, work is already being done to develop heat-tolerant livestock. However, improvements in animal housing need to be developed in conjunction with increased and expanded healthcare services for humans in rural areas. And this conversation about creating more tolerant, heat tolerant livestock leads back into the conversation we need to be having with more science and more facts inserted into the conversation about consuming modified organisms. Key four here is that rural areas are going to get hit hard. Rural communities, they often lack the resources and the infrastructure to even deal with major issues that they might have that are temporary. When you're talking about major climate change issues, they simply don't have what they need to have at this juncture to handle what's coming. To put it simply, America's rural areas are not equipped to deal with climate change. So the next section is built environment, urban systems, and cities. Now, cities are going to face growing challenges. A good chunk of what has already been said is said again in this section. And given the social and racial issues present in cities, it's going to be especially bad. And this is a discussion we need to start having right now, especially in the community with regards to Black people. Forward-looking city designs are a must. City planners and building constructors can't look at the way things have been done for insight onto as to how to develop. They have to look at the future and guess what might happen in terms of climate. You can't build a building now the same way you would build one in the 1920s or 30s, because that building, with the increased storms and everything else, will probably get knocked down. So that's one of the things we're looking at with this section on cities and urban systems. One of the things about construction and city planning that comes to mind is that there's currently, when we talk about affordable housing, the affordability of these futuristic or these updated designs, because I'm sure there's going to be a cost increase associated with these new and innovative building designs. And unless they all forget their past of being heartless and become like the Grinch after his heart grew, then those of us in the Black community are still going to be fucked. But there is a way to remedy that. We just got to put our heads together and make something happen. Now, there are cities out there that are stepping up in various ways, some of them, and you should definitely check your city to see if your city is one of those cities. And if your city isn't, especially if you're on a coastline, you might want to nudge a little bit to get those conversations started in your local municipality. So the next section, and bear with me, I appreciate you guys. We got one more section to go after this one, and then we'll be done until the show on Thursday, where we're going to cover the other half. But the next section is on transportation. Now, transportation, like everything else, is at risk with the climate change we're facing. And this section is going to be shorter because it's essentially saying the same thing, just looking at the transportation system. Economically, it'll be hit. Structurally, it'll be hit. And it will deliver a strong hit to all of our lives if those sectors are shut down. That being said, for us in the Black community, again, we're going to be disproportionately affected because of most of these things that, well, you know why we're going to be disproportionately affected. We've done shows on that ample times. Implicit bias, lack of resources, outright racism, and the stress of structural collapse at the hands of climate change is going to exacerbate all of our social issues and tensions. I have no faith that it's going to bring us together. I have every expectation that when shit hits the fan, we're all going to hit the fan and be scattered with it. So we really got to get it together. We just can't be counting on other people to come up with these solutions and expect it to filter down to us. It doesn't work that way. It never has. I don't expect it ever will until we start implementing some educational and cultural and other type realignment practices. That being said, transportation is going to get hit. It's going to get hard. And there are things being done to strengthen and reinforce the transportation networks. But like with everything else, we're significantly behind the curve. And finally here, we have air quality. Now, air pollution is a problem that's going to get worse. More than a third of Americans now live in communities where air pollution exceeds health-based air quality standards. And that is serious. I mentioned before about how much I like to breathe. A part of that is because I'm asthmatic and I know what it's like not to. In the case, if we look at one of the bad cases of air pollution, a country like China, where as much as 80% of their population is exposed to air quality that is extremely hazardous outside of regulatory limits in America and in the EU in certain places. More than 80% of their population is exposed to that sort of toxic air. 4,400 people a day died back in 2015 because of exposure. Other organizations suggest that as much as 25% of heart disease cases are caused by air pollution or have air pollution as a causal factor, one of the causal factors. In April of 2018, Forbes put out an article that said that more than 6 million people had died because of air pollution in 2016 globally. Toxic air not only kills crops, it not only kills livestock, it not only poisons the land, but it kills people. Not to mention it reduces visibility. So I like to see too, although seeing isn't nearly as important as breathing. But air pollution is a major issue. And I talked about this a little bit in one of my earlier shows. I forget which one. Just go back and listen to all of them until you find it. But the fact that more people die every year from breathing than from smoking or drinking alcohol should say a lot. It should. This is ridiculous. This is redonkulous. So, with that being said, we move on. Wildfires. There are wildfires happening right now in Northern California. The wildfires have been burning pretty much all summer, killing almost 100 people, with hundreds more. Some estimates say as many as 500 more people just missing and costing billions of dollars in damage. And those fires are attributed in part to climate change. They're also degrading the air quality. Breathing in smoke is never a good thing. Allergic illnesses are going to get worse. I spoke earlier about having asthma. Asthma qualifies. Hay fever qualifies. There are other airborne allergic reactions that are going to get worse in an environment with the degraded quality of air. That means more money spent on healthcare and people dying simply from going outside. Now, working to fix air quality is also working to fix climate change. Because like with refrigerants mentioned earlier, a lot of the substances released into the atmosphere have multiple effects. A lot of the chemicals that lower air quality and cause health issues are also greenhouse gases, which is another reason why I say that even if you don't believe in climate change, taking steps to improve our impact on the planet, I mean, it just makes plain sense. So with that, I want to thank you guys for listening. On Thursday, we will have the show where we will finish out the report. We're going to be looking at the sections on human health, tribes and indigenous people, climate effects on U.S. international interests, sector interactions, multiple stresses and complex systems, the Northeast, the Southeast, the U.S. Caribbean, the Midwest, Northern Great Plains, Southern Great Plains, Northwest, the Southwest, Alaska, Hawaii, and U.S. affiliated Pacific Islands. Then we're going to be looking at reducing risk through adaptation actions and reducing risk through emissions mitigation. That's the show. Thank you for listening. Catch you next week. Another episode of
Lessons from the Screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. I also want to encourage you guys to head over to the website, www.freedomtrainnetwork.com. You can head over there to the website, gain access to all of the shows on the Freedom Train Network, including this one. You can access to old shows, new shows. You should also check out the Freedom Train app. You can find it in the Google Play Store. If you research Google Play or research Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Presents the Freedom Train Network, you'll find the app there and you'll see the Choo Choo Train. That is our trademark Choo Choo Train for the Freedom Train. You can get all of the shows right there on your cell phone notification whenever we drop anything, or maybe we just want to see a notification saying hi. You should definitely go and get that app. And you should also take a listen to our live internet radio streams throughout the weekend. We're dropping lectures, we're dropping shows, we're dropping all kinds of interesting things on the weekends. So definitely take advantage of that. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us. And as always, we appreciate you. We'll see you next week. This is the Freedom Train Network Presents Lessons from the Screen.